Blog Talk Radio.
One of the greats of the black and the first black saints canonized by the Catholic Church, a person of mixed parentage, I guess you call him mestizo. He was St. Martin de Porres, a South American who was half African ethnicity, Spanish, famous, and he helped the poor. He was canonized as a saint. And there is one charity here in San Francisco, which does it. And they try to feed the poor, and they actually do, and everybody's a volunteer. A lot of these, what I call bogus nonprofits, get out of that money and foundation money. They do as little as possible, but collect as much as possible so they can continue their lifestyle of BMWs. Some of them are into cocaine, some of them are into pornography, prostitution. It's not all of them, but there are a few that are, and we have to acknowledge that. And get people out of the chair. I would advise people, having worked in the field, that if you really want to help the poor, organizations that don't get federal money, foundation money, help them by charity for their, if they have a soup kitchen or food, and make sure it's dated also. We're going to get to that because the codes on a lot of food, cans, and packaged food, if it's out of date, it can be dangerous to somebody who has cancer or other illnesses. So it's important to know if that food is still edible and you can eat it safely after the expiration date. And usually give you a couple of months of expiration notice, so it's still good for a couple of months after that. But you don't want to take any chances. If you have cancer or any of those elements, it's something that's bad, make you even sicker. Among the other birthdays today, one of the greats of the Swedish missionary leaders, Gustavus Adolphus. During the 16th century, Sweden was a leading military power in Europe, on the European continent. They fought against the great. And the Russians try to keep them at bay, keep the Russian bear at bay. That's always been an agenda of the powers in Europe. And his famous piece of music by Hugo Elfing. He was born today, not him, it was Adolphus. And then we had John Milton, Paradise Lost, great writer. you had, when you look for frozen food and you see the name Birdseye, Craig Birdseye was born in 1886. I understand he may have lived in Illinois, where I grew up. Also, if you went to the circus, one of the greatest clowns in modern times was Emmett Flea. He was born today. In the movies, Douglas Fairbanks Jr. during World War II, David Niven, a lot of these guys served in the military. So today, if you remember Highway Patrol, Roderick Crawford, born and he's even more famous for the movie that's depicted Huey Long's life, All the King Men. And a great grab voice, and would you believe in Philadelphia. And then this is a friend of the guy on MSNBC who, when he thinks about Obama, gets a trickle down, his leg for electricity. Tip O'Neill was born today. And I forgot his name because he's eminently forgettable because he's so politically correct. And then Kirk Douglas was born today. Now, his father was a Jewish, pig picker. The family name was Isser Dembski. That's the Russian Jewish name. And then Dina Merrill was born. She was married one time to Cliff Robertson, who was in the film The Best Man, 1809. And also, I think she was from the Post, the guy who invented the cereal company up in New York. Remember the TV show with Red Fox? He was born today. Another TV show. A lot of actors today. Dick Van Patten. We had John Cassavetes. We had, if you remember, the latest M in the 007 James Bond films, Dame Judi Dench. She was born today. Bo Biff, just his family. John Malkovich. And the famous family, was born today. Among the deaths, the first most prominent black in the UN, Ralph Bunche, died today. Leon Jaworski, who was the lead prosecutor in the Watergate scandal. And Ronway Corrigan, that was a guy who was supposed to fly, I think, to the West Coast and end up flying to Ireland. And he either lied or gave the wrong flight plan, and so they dubbed him. He landed safely, so they call him Wrong Way Corrigan. And then among the events today, the Pulitzer, bought the St. Louis, or started the St. Louis Dispatch newspaper, and then he died. That also, two things, though, the Pulitzer Prize for Excellence in Journalism has been polluted. And then he and Hearst competed to start the Spanish-American War. And then in 1961, this case is very relevant to San Francisco, to the Steve Mary, Juan Peabody, Taryn Owen, and Ryan case. A.F. Eichmann was found guilty after they had captured the Mossad, had tracked him to Argentina, in the suburb of Buenos Aires. And he's edited and brought back to Israel, tried, and executed. And his ashes, his corpse was burned, and ashes were spread over the Mediterranean, so no fun. One of the greatest mayors in the history of California, and maybe in the United States, a man who was not only came here as a legal immigrant as a baby in 1907, came here from Greece, went to night school, and he started a major degree. Became Burke Farms and was sold to Borden. Was also a civic citizen in many positions in Cisco. And as an advisor, used him as a different structure. And so to remove the key of Khrushchev's feelings after Krim Sultan was on a state between the United States. Also, he dealt with people like General Chisholm when he shooter, and interviewed George Cooper for 11 years before he died. He gave many interviews. And here's one on how he dealt with Charles de Gaulle, who also came to Cisco. We do not have some. We do not have strong war leaders, possibly because this has become a hotbed. Pedophilia, pedophiles, prostitution, drugs, non-accountability, political corruption. We met Rome like a Boy Scout camp. So here's what George Christopher said about Charles de Gaulle.
Diplomatic mission, I think, involved de Gaulle or Conrad Adenauer. What? De Gaulle, Charles de Gaulle.
Oh, yeah, I received him, too. How do you know all these things?
I did some checking.
Well, you had to treat him differently. You have to be versatile in treating each person one way or another. Now, with Khrushchev, I took some liberties at the outset to be with some jesting. On the way back, I had stopped over in Paris and I invited de Gaulle to come to San Francisco, and I told him I'd give him the biggest reception he ever had. Well, he took that as a matter of speaking. But one day I got a telephone call that he's coming. It was from Eisenhower's office. So Eisenhower and I got along very nicely. He respected me and I respected him. Anyway, and I told his staff, I said, now look, when he comes, he'll be landing on Treasure Island, and I want him to arrive at exactly 20 minutes to 12. So, why 20 minutes to 12? Why not 11:30 or why not 12 o'clock? Well, I had my plans. My plans were I appointed every building manager on Montgomery Street in the immediate area, and I sent them all a letter. I said, save your ticker tape, tell your, and put a big sign on in the lobby of your building, save your ticker tape, General de Gaulle will be arriving at 12 o'clock. Let's give him the biggest reception he ever had.
Bigger than New York, huh?
And I said also, then I called the French school. They gave the kids half a day off to come down with the French flags and all that. And instead of coming in at 20 minutes to 12, they came in at about 11:30, about 10, 15 minutes early. Well, that kind of threw me off base because I didn't want to go down there at 11:45. California Street and up Post Street. My purpose was to have all these girls and fellows who work in the office to be out in the street. That was my conniving purpose. So, as a result, I called in a couple of admirals to make a little speech. They weren't on the program, but I said, that did say something. I extended my remarks from 3 minutes to about 6 minutes. I got one of his people to speak, and at 5 minutes to 12, we were completed with all our ceremonies. I said, okay, now we can go. So we drove. I told the driver, just arrive at 12 o'clock at the end of the bridge, the one that swerves off. We went up California Street, up Montgomery Street, up Post Street. There were 250,000 people out there. And later, he was so pleased. He was so pleased. He stood up in the car and waved at all the people. First time, his aide said, "I've been with the general for 30 years. The first time I've seen him smile." So sometimes you have to alter your methods. But he was I got the medal he gave me, the Legion of Honor, just on account of that. I didn't earn it, but he gave me the Legion of Honor.
You gave him the best parade he had in his life.
Yeah. So anyway, I've talked too much.
Oh, no. Well, one last big question.
Now, we excerpted this very long TV video and audio interview, and one of the the problems facing major American cities of where the occupy is going on, and they've got some relevant issues, unfortunately. They're being used as dupes, as Lenin said, useful dupes. What these people should be asking, these people who are in the towns who have lost their jobs, have had their homes foreclosed, who can't get health care that they need and they're entitled to, that they pay premiums and all that, they have to realize that in cities, that a city is not a charitable organization, it's not a nonprofit. That the business of a city is business. Property taxes helping them to provide jobs. Chris understood that. He would disagree with what's going on, especially in San Francisco, where the nonprofits, quote, a sleazy nonprofit operator said, nonprofits run this in town. And it's true, he didn't, I won't use the F word that he used, but this is what George said. San Francisco was a city that was fiscally solvent. It ran in one of the best police departments, the most honest government, and one of the best housing. In fact, it was one of the only housing authorities in the country that made money. Most of them are dead, and HUD can't bail them out, and so what they're doing is going to developers like this out in New York, related. This guy, Stephen Ross, who used to run Kinney Car Rental. But this is George Cooper, the business of the city.
Bringing up the revenues in the place that could alleviate the burden in the outlying area, too.
On the small homeowner.
Well, on the small homeowners, because if we didn't have the redevelopment of Japantown, for instance, which I did, and the redevelopment of the other areas of Golden Gateway, and also the garages that I built, which sustained the business element downtown. Otherwise, we'd have lost two or three of our major store operators. For instance, let's say, just contemplate for a minute what a disaster would be, let's say, if Macy's closed tomorrow. The destruction of that area itself would be reflected in every single home in San Francisco.
Like Cleveland was in the 70s.
Well, so you have to have a combination where the mayor has the goodwill and the confidence of the business community, the investing community. If those two elements don't work together, the city can be in trouble. I recall when I wanted to build the 5th and Mission garage, for instance. And I had, even then, I had dissidents, even for that. And a group came in, they said, no, we're against it. There's a few houses down there, a few this and that. And we're against it. One fellow got up and he said, the only reason you're doing this is because you want to help the Emporium and iMagnon and the City of Paris. And I was supposed to get up and deny that, you know. They thought I'd get up and deny it vehemently and say, no, that isn't what I'm doing it for. But I got up and I said, I want to say that you're absolutely right. That's just why I'm doing it, because I want to keep the Emporium and these other department stores active and prosperous, making money and paying taxes. And if we don't do this, we're going to lose them. Well, they were shocked that I agreed with them.
Now, that's helping the above structure. One of the major problems facing this city is deferred maintenance. And then, despite the fact that, you know, as you well know, the bonds seem to, we float them and we never know where they end up. Can you comment on that?
Well, deferred maintenance, I wish Harry Ross was still alive. He could tell you. Because when I went in, it's been a habit of mayors over the years, especially around election time.
Rubber there.
You folks who are in the public realm, I say this to the newspapers and to the radio broadcasters and anybody who's involved, you have to be careful about the bond issues, because if the mayor does not pay attention to the deferred maintenance, then eventually what they do is the assets fall apart, and then they ask for a bond issue. Well, Harry Ross and I had a had an agreement. I would put in $18 million a year excess in the budget just for the deferred maintenance that had been eliminated in prior years, but still, in the meantime, keep up what's necessary for the present. But to catch up, and in 8 years, say I put in $160 million practically for deferred maintenance. And deferred maintenance is one of the best opportunities to avoid bond issues. Another thing, too, I never did at that time, was to take money out of the water department, Hetch-Hetchy, and put it in the general fund. Today, they'll take $40, $50 million of the profits of the Hetch-Hetchy project to in the general fund. In the meantime, the general fund is accelerating. Well, here's what's going to happen someday. Someday, they're going to come with a bond for a bond issue and say, Hetch Hetchy water supply needs $100 or $200 million.
We're getting there.
We're getting there, yes. You see, this deferred maintenance is it's something that nobody sees. Nobody understands what it is. It's a hidden enemy. And if you don't keep up with it, you're going to be in trouble.
Well, I'm going to keep talking about it. One of my favorite subjects, as you know, the poor sailor who's in jail and is 3 years, no fresh air or sunlight. The kid, Steve Neri, the young sailor who's been accused of killing a politician, was connected to Hallinan. We brought it up before. But when you built that jail, it was a state-of-the-art jail at the time. I remember you mentioning that you had consulted with the best prison experts, the FBI.
You mean the new...
Yeah, 850, Bryant, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well.
But at that time, you didn't expect people to stay there 2-3 years like they're doing right now, did you?
No. That was a kind of a temporary thing before they went to the higher element.
Oh, right. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
The big two. Okay. What is the problem with San Bruno? That's another. That's always in the federal courts.
I don't know. You know, you're asking me questions that I'm not aware of. San Bruno, someday somebody will come along and say, we need another bond issue, too.
Right, yeah. Well, we've had bond issues, and it never seems to get physically rehabilitated.
Another thing, too, that will come up sometime in the next, I would say, 3 or 4 years, will be Laguna Honda Home. And this will be a disaster, because the more it deteriorates, the more you need to rehabilitate it. And Laguna Honda Home is a very vital necessity.
What would you say, of course, we didn't get to this one, our previous conversations, but the Muni. I've been to cities, as you have, all around the world, and this is one of the best laid out transportation systems, but one of the worst managed. What would you recommend that they do to get it running efficiently?
You see, the Muni today has more problems, and I hate to say this, but quite a bit of it is due to personnel. And the unions, and I have nothing against the unions because I worked with them. I never, in my private business, I was there 45 years, never had any trouble. I paid the top wages. Always had a very amicable relationship. But if you give somebody just a little leeway, and you're a little negligent, then these problems multiply. And for instance, this fellow Cruz that was running the Muni for several years, he's a fine man. I know him quite well. He's a gentleman. He's a fine man in every way. But if I were the mayor at the time when Willie Bond got in, I don't think I would have appointed him as general manager of the Muni. I would have searched around and found out who was available with transportation experience. And, you know, you just can't pick somebody off the street just because you're a secretary, make a general manager out of them, and jump them for 40, $50,000 a year up to $160,000.
I think he has an engineering degree.
What?
I think he has an engineering degree from Stanford.
Yeah, there are a lot of engineers, but they don't know how to run an
right.
Yeah, that's hardly. You need a streetcar operator. That's what you need.
Yeah.
Now we've got another situation where this Booz Allen is going to come in. They're engineers too, but they've been getting some millions of dollars in the past for their opinions. Well, the opinions don't seem to work.
But they keep getting the millions.
But they keep getting the millions, yeah.
One of the other problems I see in a city, and it's close to Rich Disco's in my heart, is the voter fraud. I see more and more voter fraud. I see more and more of it. I have access to the entire state's database through political consultants that I know, and I've seen things. I've even talked to some people who voted fraudulently. It seems that this city is becoming more and more balkanized. You know what I mean, especially coming from Greece, you know, from that part. What can we do to bring this city together?
Well, that's a broad question. It calls for a broad answer.
You're a politician.
Yeah. But, you know, getting back to what I said at the outset here, there's... Now, my memory goes back to the time when Angelo Rossi was defeated, and downtown at that time wanted to get somebody to take over the mayor's office. Nobody would run. Finally, what did they do? They got hold of Roger Lapham, an eminent businessman, no expert. The story to him was, look, we know you do not know how to run the city. We know that. We know that you're not a fiscal expert from the standpoint of running San Francisco. We want you to get in there and be a caretaker until something develops. Roger Lapham went in there. He had the clock running. Day by day was one day less. And he was just a caretaker. He didn't... But he bought the muni. He was able to arrange that. If nothing else, that was sufficient. But the climate today really is not the same as it was in those days. It was not, because that's one of the things I always held against George Riley when I ran against him. He had been appointed to the Board of Supervisors by Angelo Rossi. And yet he ran against Angelo Rossi for mayor.
That's gratitude.
One day he and I were talking, and he said, you don't seem to have much confidence in me. I said, well, no, George. I said, you've been on the Board of Equalization for a long time, and that's not my style. I said, but... The only thing I would resent about you is that you ran against the man who appointed you to the Board of Supervisors. And I says, I don't like ingrates. That's complete ingratitude. Yeah.
The bileless weed.
Yeah.
Can we get to the lighter subject, back to Mrs. Khrushchev? Do you remember the episode when they came here?
Well, it has been Monday, but George probably because he was a neutral header in light business. And domestic troubleshooter and great personal friend. We have some revealing city like not in San Francisco, but in other cities in the country, who plan on recent and now the still presidency and charitable organizations, 501c's have been cut and they're becoming the new political team. That another day. This is Paul Bella, and we're in tonight with politics and poker. I don't think all these politicians and president are down in the game of poker. Who takes the pot?
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I. I'm
fine. Me too.
That's what they all say with Peter Alvazo, and we'll be back Monday for another day of the new universe as it starts cold. So good night. Thanks for listening.